make sense. If you were a child killer, you took these pictures. Would you leave them out in the bed for anyone to find?
They may have been put away. Anderton might have found them.
What kind of cop were you before this?
Treasury agent. 8 years.
This would be your first sexual murder scene.
Yeah.
I worked homicide before I went federal. This is what we'd call an orgy of evidence. Know how many orgies I had as a homicide cop, Gordon?
How many?
None. This was all arranged. This is what we'd call an orgy of evidence. Know how many orgies I had as a homicide cop, Gordon?
How many?
None. This is what we'd call an orgy of evidence.
How many?
None. This was all arranged. This was all arranged.
No corporate candy floss news and no political spin. This is Truth Radio by Internet. Thanks to our sponsor, Neemwell.com, because here, the expression is still free.
Close your eyes. Imagine you're going on a journey beyond the subtle sound.
Saturday the 7th of May 2005, and you are tuned to the 9/11 Minority Report, an investigation of 9/11, the events that led up to it, and the cover-up that followed. This is Truth Radio on BreakForNews.com.
Would you do me a favor and push me on to the next level?
And this is Fintan Dunn reporting. Thank you for tuning in, and thanks to our sponsor, Neemwell.com. That's Neemwell.com, or email Kathy McMahon, Kathy. Now, if you're new to this material, you might not be aware of our earlier publications on the issue. Two articles posted on the internet 7 and 14 days after 9/11. You can check those out at wagkingdom.com, wagkingdom.com. Okay, let's do it. Where to start with an issue as big as 9/11? Let's start right here.
Another bomb, move back!
Oh my God, another bomb.
Now confirmed through federal authorities that a second bomb has been found inside that federal building in Oklahoma City. It was an explosion at 9 o'clock this morning that did that damage you're looking at right there.
I just took a look down the street at the Mara building again. I see another bomb truck going, so apparently they're going to try to get out that third bomb that's been talked about.
The reports I have is that one device was deactivated. Apparently there's another device, and obviously whatever did the damage to the Murrah building was a tremendous, very sophisticated explosive device. So
right now they are saying that this is the work of a sophisticated group. This is a very sophisticated device, and it has to have been done by an explosives expert.
There are a number of good reasons to start with Oklahoma. It was the defining mass spectacle terror event on American soil, and it found eerie echoes recently in the Beslan hostage crisis in Russia. These two events, and 9/11 itself, can be described under a term you've probably heard before. It's shock and awe, and it is, as you know, used to intimidate and terrorize. There's another good reason to start with Oklahoma, because it was one of the opening moves of the Bush presidency to intervene in the case of Timothy McVeigh. Was that because George Bush was stricken with conscience over the possibility that he might, without due process, allow someone to be executed? No, I don't think so. So if that wasn't the reason, why did George Bush intervene? It was to demonstrate the new president's power of decision over issues of life and death. It was an early mechanism by which the Bush administration could coat the presidency with the veneer of power. And when in due course Timothy McVeigh was executed, some of the raw power of that terrible event rubbed off on George W. Bush. Is this then how politics works? Well, of course it is. It's not just a question of photo opportunities. It's a question of message opportunities. And in the new marketing-led era of politics, message opportunities are not something that arise by accident. Instead, they are carefully planned. Okay, let's do the first perspective shift. The reason they're carefully planned is that politics in the era of reality television is, of course, a soap opera. And a soap opera is quite simple, really. It's a set of often daily episodes where interesting things happen, interspersed by relentless pounding home of a particular message. That's the advertising. And you know how a soap opera works, don't you? You've seen enough of them, I'm sure. It works like this. Somebody writes a script, and then a lot of actors show up at the right place, at the right time, and deliver prearranged lines. Just like it says in the script. They're just roles. They're just what keeps the customers happy. Politics, as you know, works just the same when a series of actors show up and deliver their prearranged lines, just like George Bush delivering those White House statements on the Timothy McVeigh case. Although, of course, we know that some people have more trouble remembering their lines than others. And, of course, it goes without saying that at the beginning of every episode, all the actors know how it's going to work out. And not just with Oklahoma or Beslan, but also Monica Gate and Watergate. Mass market, marketing-led politics is still politics, and politics is social drama, and the dramas are scripted. Scripted, just like 9/11 was scripted. And some will say, well, yes, we know that the events of the day of 9/11 were scripted. Of course they were, but I'm not speaking about the day. I'm speaking of 9/11. How long do you think the script is for 9/11? The 9/11 script is 15 years long, running from at least 1993 to 2008. And the events of the 11th of September 2001 were just one day in that script. So why does 9/11 need a 15-year script? Let's get specific. I'm allowing for about 7 or 8 years before and after the events of 9/11. An operation of that scale requires at least 4 years in preparation, and because Oklahoma factors in, then let's allow 8 years. 7 or 8 years of preparation for an event like 9/11 is a relatively obvious point, but 7 or 8 years of follow-up is a much more interesting point, because you can learn just as much from the cover-up as the event itself. In fact, as you'll see, the cover-up is an integral part of the event itself. And when you think about it, that's obvious too. The cover-up inevitably flows from cues in the event itself. And I'd like to draw a comparison here with the JFK issue. It's stating the obvious to say that anybody involved in an assassination or a coup needs to ensure that they are going to be in power for a sufficient period afterwards to prevent proper investigation. And so it's without question that advance planning for 9/11 would have encompassed a period of 2 presidential administrations where power was retained by those who had most to lose. Therefore, John Kerry's defeat was not unfortunate, bad luck, bad timing, or just the way it goes. John Kerry's defeat was inevitable. John Kerry's defeat was inevitable. It was in the script. Kerry could not be allowed to become president. Not because he'd pull the troops out of Iraq or suddenly begin to investigate the 9/11 issue. No, because it would have taken the lid off the pressure cooker too early. The lid needs to be kept on for at least 7 or 8 years, at least 2 administrations on these issues. And yes, there are strategic plans to keep the lid on all sorts of issues for much longer time frames. But from a strategic basis, there's no question that the 8-year period following 9/11 would be a particular focus. And so, if Kerry's defeat is in the script, there's something else in the script then as well. Your reaction to Kerry's defeat is in the script. You see, your reaction's always in the script. In fact, your reaction is the most important part in the script, just like in a soap. And your reaction is always in the script. Reaction all around the world is always in the script. Only thing is, if Kerry was meant to be defeated, then what was George Soros doing investing all that money? Well, I suppose you'd have to think of that really as an investment, a corporate investment in the American left wing. That's because they like you so much. George Soros is Mr. Rent-A-Revolution, who's part of the crew going around starting up revolutions on demand, and whatever colour you want them in too. Of course, the Democrats and Republicans work side by side in these Institute for New Democracy, etc., and other front organisations designed to set up new democracies in the process of regime change. I'm going to connect all this up to 9/11. The best defence against real grassroots opposition to 9/11, to the war in Iraq, is to buy, like George Soros did, political real estate. Not to help them get anywhere, but to make sure they never do. And as the new frontier is on the internet, then it's no surprise that we had a gung-ho Howard Dean out there colonizing the internet. Soros money in Move On, colonizing the internet yet again. Here's the key point. Money buys you a piece of the social media political market. With money, you can buy yourself a piece of the action. You can create the action. And that's going to be very important as we turn to another arm of the 9/11 issue. There are four key aspects to this. The political, which we've just examined. The rise to power of the corporates. The all-pervasive military-industrial complex. And most deadly of all in this context, the increasingly powerful secret intelligence services and their use of psychological techniques for political and social control. That's where we're turning our focus now. And as we do, keep in mind those two aspects we've seen in the political sphere. The pervasive use of scripting and the availability of virtually unlimited funds in order to buy a piece of the action, if not indeed, all the action. Next up, the planning and the cover-up of 9/11. This is Truth Radio on breakfornews.com, and we'll be right back.
Damn, it feels good to be a gangster, feeding the poor and helping out with their bills. Although I was born in Jamaica, now I'm in the US making deals. Damn, it feels good to be a gangster. I mean, one that you don't really know. Riding around town in a drop-top Benz, hitting switches in my black 6-4. Now gangster-ass niggas come in all shapes and colors. Some got killed in the past, but this gangster here was a smart one. Started living for the Lord and I last. Now all I gotta say to you, wanna be, gonna be pussy and cocksucking pranksters. When the shit jumps off, what the fuck you gonna do? Damn, it feels good to be a gangster.
And now, a word from the president.
Damn, it feels good to be a gangster. Getting voted into the White House. Everything looking good to the people of the world, but the Murphy family is my boss. So every now and then, I hold a favor here and there, like letting a big drug shipment through and send them to the poor community so we can bust you know who. The voters of the world keep supporting me, and I promise to take you very far. Other leaders better not upset me, or I'll send a million troops to die at war. To all you Republicans that helped me to win, I sincerely like to thank you. Cause now I got the world swinging from my nuts, and damn, it feels good to be a gangster.
And you're very welcome back. This is Truth Radio on breakfornews.com as we turn a focus on the intelligence services. And it's pointing out the blindingly obvious, isn't it, that in Russia we have Vladimir Putin, the KGB in power there. And meanwhile we have a president, the son of a former head of the CIA. CIA being a handy catchphrase which summarizes a number of agencies all the way from the NSA now to Homeland Security. A vast apparatus layered like an onion with rings within rings based on need to know. Until you reach at last the heart of darkness. That's the place where the word cunning and the word power intersect. So, if we assume that 9/11 is an inside job, then this is the place it comes from. I am, of course, assuming you already know that 9/11 was an inside job. If you're someone who believes the mainstream line on 9/11, then you need to stop listening now. This is not intended to convince you, because you can't be convinced. After all, if you buy this, if you buy that Muhammad Atta's passport was found in the street a couple of blocks from the World Trade Center, then frankly, nothing's going to convince you. And that's a really good place to begin looking at the meticulous detail which is applied to these kinds of operations. That anyone could ever possibly have believed that Muhammad Atta's passport would be found in the street, it's just such a bizarre and incredible claim. Are these people really that inept that they figure people would believe that? Well, that's where meticulous detail comes in, because ineptitude has nothing to do with it. The passport was a signal to the media. By releasing that information, the government says to the media, here is the official government ludicrous claim about the passport. We expect you to buy this ludicrous claim, and we expect you to report it with a straight face. In other words, in a subtle way, that for whatever reasons of its own, and who knows what they are, and governments know best after all, the government has determined that this is the line, this is the way the story will be treated, and the media are expected to follow along. And that's the signal. A little media flag in there. Hello media, it's the government here. That jet exploded in a huge fireball, but we found the hijacker's passport in the street. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Okay, found it in the street. Okay, everybody get the message? Everybody, more importantly, on message? Good. So now, let's just ponder. What other little cues are in there? What other big cues are in there? The answers will surprise you. And so, we're at the heart of the matter. Here's where the events of the day point to both the planning and the cover-up of 9/11. Meticulously planned events, which were, at one point, inevitably, a challenge for those constructing the 9/11 event. What are the challenges to be faced by such planners? Well, JFK is a good starting point. Of course, you had a Warren Commission, as you've had a 9/11 Commission, of course. Of course, there was a Muhammad Atta and an Oswald. And naturally, there were a great many conspiracy theories, and undoubtedly, some conspiracy theories were being advanced by people who were smokescreens clouding the issue. But that's where all the similarities end, because JFK took place in another era, in an era where it took years for facts to come out, and come out in print. Now, we're in the era of instant facts on the internet, and that presents a challenge of a completely different order. But then, challenges are there to be faced and met. And the first and most obvious point that would occur to anyone opening up a pad on day one of planning 9/11 is that the truth was inevitably going to come out on the internet. Unfortunately for us, that's not really a challenge at all. That's a piece of cake, because the internet is already worked out. You don't think that this system of control of information was going to allow the internet to come into existence without a strategic plan to cope with that. Long before 9/11, the controllers of information had bought vast tracts of real estate on the internet. They'd bought their way in through news sites, opinion sites, forums, long before 9/11, and most of the rubbish, most of the very well promoted conspiracy material, is part of the outpourings of that vast investment. Because there is one problem with the internet, it is free expression, but you've got a problem just like applies in the movie business. If you don't have distribution in the movie business, then you can't get mass audience. Distribution is the key to getting information out, and distribution can be bought. You can purchase distribution, you can build distribution, you can control distribution. And so our 9/11 planner, with the pad open and the word internet written down as the first challenge, can simply tick that word off. So the internet's not going to be a problem. They already have the internet. Conspiracy sites, we got them. News sites, we got them. Forums, we've got them. We've got the internet distribution. So what's the next challenge? Investigators. They were all over the JFK issue. And that is a problem, no matter how meticulously planned an operation is. Just like with a bridge, you plan it properly, it gets built and it stays up. But every bridge develops cracks. And every operation has cracks. And if you've got investigators and cracks, you've got a recipe. You've got a recipe for disaster. After something like this, who knows what people might look at and who knows what they might reveal. And the solution to this is so simple and so elegant that it's almost like something you might see in one of those Hollywood movies that's got a twisting script. And I'm sure you've seen a few of those in your time, so here's a question. Do you think that the planner or planners of such an operation will be more or less competent than the average Hollywood scriptwriter? I think more. I think a lot more. And the answer they came up with for the investigator issue, it seems obvious in retrospect, but it's an interesting twist. And curiously enough, we're going to use a Hollywood movie with a twisting script to make the point. The movie is, of course, Minority Report, starring Tom Cruise. Cruise plays the head of a new law enforcement division, pre-crime. The pre-crime division uses precognitives to predict crimes and intercept them before they can occur, particularly the crime of murder. The character Tom Cruise plays is still haunted by the loss of his son Sean, who disappeared some years ago. But now someone's trying to cleverly use his emotional reaction to that in order to lure the head of pre-crime into committing a murder himself.
Is what my son would look like if he were alive today. If I would recognize him if I saw him on the street. The second is what I would do to the man who took him.
Afford an attorney. We will appoint one.
Do you understand these rights?
You're not gonna kill me? If you don't go through with this, my family gets nothing. Okay? You're supposed to kill me. You said you would.
He? Who's he?
I don't know. He called me in my cell. He told me I'd be released if I went along and my family would be taken care of.
If you did what? If you did what?
If I acted like I killed your kid, okay?
If you killed my kid.
Look, you don't kill me, my family gets nothing, okay?
What about the pictures?
They're fake. You gave them to me. Okay?
Now listen to me. You tell me, who was it set this up?
I don't know. Come
I'm
on!
I'm asking you again. Who was it to put you up?
I didn't see his face.
Goodbye, Grandma.
Anderson, wait a second!
The gun goes off accidentally, and now the character played by Tom Cruise is really in trouble. He flees the scene. Cut to the arrival of Colin Farrell, a detective investigating the scene of the apparent murder. He finds Cruise's weapon there lying on the ground. He sees the bed strewn with photographs of children, one of them showing young Sean with the victim of the murder. He's standing with the man who has apparently just been shot by Tom Cruise.
Doesn't make sense. If you were a child killer, you took these pictures. Would you leave them out in the bed for anyone to find?
They may have been put away. Anderton might have found them.
What kind of cop were you before this?
Treasury agent. 8 years.
This would be your first actual murder scene.
Yeah.
I worked homicide before I went federal. This is what we'd call an orgy of evidence. Know how many orgies I had as a homicide cop, Gordon?
How many?
None. This was all arranged. No many orgies I had as a homicide cop, Gordon.
How many?
None. No many orgies I had as a homicide cop.
How many?
None. This was all arranged. This was all arranged. This was all arranged.
An orgy of evidence, and that's exactly how they solve the problem of the cracks and the investigators. Why take the risk of investigators stumbling across unknown cracks in the edifice of 9/11? There's no need. You see, this is way too critical to be left to chance. It's too risky to merely infiltrate information into the internet investigation of the 9/11 issue. The smokescreen crew for 9/11 must be able to completely obscure legitimate investigation. They must comprise the vast majority of investigators. But what on earth will they talk about? Just as in the movie business, a distribution channel is no use unless you've got people in the movie theatres. And so if people come up with interesting information about the 9/11 operation, there will be no choice but to follow it up. Some of those leads, some of that information, might lead to dangerous places, and who knows what could happen. Well, there is only one answer. A herd of investigators needs an orgy of evidence. And as Farrell deduced in Minority Report, that evidence will be planted at the scene of the crime by the perpetrators, waiting there to be discovered by the herd of investigators. And each of these pieces in the orgy of evidence, like Kerry's presidency, will look promising and lead nowhere. Some will just fizzle out. Some will be cleverly constructed ambushes. Some will be just confusing detail, layered on to add to the smokescreen. And so the confusion that results won't be natural. It will arise from the careful construction of a hall of mirrors designed to be confusing, which will not alone allow the information creators to monitor and manage the presentation of this information on the internet, but also serve to cover up the legitimate cracks which might appear. And after the herd of investigators have hashed and rehashed the information enough, then comes the second phase of confusion, where sections of the herd of investigators begin to call each other names, to denounce each other's analysis, and to accuse each other in turn of being government agents. This confusion, these allegations, like the intelligence apparatus that dreamed it up, it is layered in onions, with an outer layer who are readily disposable, who are there to be exposed and give credibility to those who expose them. In other words, to apply the techniques of COINTELPRO, to apply counterintelligence techniques to the 9/11 issue and the 9/11 movement. Also, to carefully time the outbreak of name-calling in the 9/11 movement with the exit of a lot of people into the Kerry presidency bid, thus fracturing the movement when it's at its lowest number of participants. The eventual aim, to leave the 9/11 movement as disillusioned as those who supported Kerry, using mind games to run them into the ground. It's an information age, so it's information warfare. We've been trampled by a herd of investigators. We've been swamped by an orgy of evidence. It's also psychological warfare. Mac Politics is a franchise, just as much as Mac 9/11 Movement. And like any franchise, like any corporate, they will reinvent themselves as they go along and use their distribution. And they will go along. You can't argue with marketing. Meanwhile, the truly independent minds on the internet will begin to ponder not so much which pieces of the 9/11 puzzle are fake, but instead, what elements of the vast dross of information are in fact the vital nuggets. But of course, it's not just in the nuggets that the answers lie, but also in the macro analysis. And it's far too easy to get lost in the detail on 9/11, precisely because it has been deliberately constructed that way. That's it for this special edition. I'll be back Monday with another edition, and I do hope you can take the time to join us then. But in the meantime, for breakfornews.com, this has been Fintan Dunn reporting. And I'm full of people, only some